Hey folks, welcome to the show. Today we are doing this after almost 1.5 months. How's it going, Sharad?
It's going very well. I think we've spent 1.5 months counting all the money we've made
Have we? Oh man.
in the buoyant, robust trading markets.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's been exciting
It's been exciting.
in that end of things. And but today's exciting again. After quite some time, we have a guest. We are both in the same room. Second wave lockdown restrictions have gone out of the window, so it's good.
Yeah, and a repeat host, a repeat guest as well.
And a new format. Today we are doing this, opener intro thingy
Yeah.
before the music comes. How exciting,
Essentially,
huh?
we've just put the mics on what we do usually.
Yeah. But no, today it's I think it's going to be a enriching conversation. I had a lot of fun last time we spoke with Madhu. So Madhu heads M2P, a fintech company.
The most undercovered and least used phrase in the world today, fintech.
Yes, exactly. So M2P does API infrastructure work, whatever that means. So I'm sure I'm glad Madhu is with us so that he can walk us through that.
Yeah.
And
And
it's
they've done well, eh? Raised a bunch of money.
ah they have. And I think the last time they spoke with us, it was in October, November. So it's been like a little over like 7 8 months, and yeah, a lot of capital has been raised. So it's always good to talk to us, no?
That's the positive sign, yeah.
That's the positive. So yeah, let's kick this off, and look forward to it, huh? Hey Sharad, how's it going? Long time, no see.
It's going all right, and we have someone who's already been on our channel once, so but a lot has changed since then.
Yeah, long time no see to him as well.
Yeah.
Hey, Madhu Sudhanan R. This is the only time I'm going to say your name in full. From M2P. Last time we spoke,
Thank
you were
you.
from Yap. A fair amount of changes have happened since October, November. So very excited to have you with us. How's it going?
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me on the show again. It's been a great few months for us. Been very busy, and I can say we are one of the benefactors of the pandemic, although it's not great for a lot of people, but our business in general has had a
Awesome. So obviously, Madhu, we have been kind of closely tracking what you guys have been up to. Very exciting stuff. You've been in the press lately for all the right reasons. So, but before we kind of get into that, since it's been a while, for the benefit of our listeners, maybe, we can just start with a quick recap of the business model of Yap, now M2P. We obviously know that you guys look at API infrastructure in a very close way. You look at payments, lending, banking, but in layman's speak, which would be nice to understand where M2P fits in the broader fintech value chain.
Yeah, so we are a we've been around for a while. We are a 6-year-old company. Started out back in the day when we were thinking about this business. It was largely aimed at businesses that were looking to adopt payments in general. Fintech was not a buzzword back then. What we saw, my co-founder and I were colleagues at Visa, what we saw in our day job was the fact that a lot of companies were trying to adopt payments and create new forms of money flow opportunities. But the banking ecosystem and the tech, while there was intent from banks to partner and do the tech and the back office in the room that they had, were not really sort of enabling, right? So that's what we felt is an interesting sort of problem to solve. And in hindsight, after 5 6 years, we think of this like what cloud computing did to hardware and servers and stuff like that, right? So so basically, we are still at a very early stage of what we believe is technology taking over in sort of banking, broader financial services businesses, right? So there is the only difference in between a cloud computing and banking is that obviously with this regulator, there's a lot of controls. It's backed by many countries, and because there is money laundering and KYC and all of those challenges that are out there. So therefore, while everybody would love to go into like just like to go into a redundancy to a cloud platform, it's got its own sort of bearings in terms of how you, you know, make sure that it is working in tandem with the regulatory sort of task as well, right? So therefore, you know, sort of, you know, to summarize our business, we are kind of like a payment infrastructure and a banking infrastructure company. So by, in theory, we actually sort of enable the banks to operate better, whereby we repurpose the tech and are able to, I mean, several banks are in the news for all the wrong reasons from a technology standpoint. Right? Mm-hmm. But really it's just overwhelming of the fact of the adoption that's happening in the market. It's not that they designed it badly, just that it outgrew its utility, and therefore there is a need and, you know, and a market force need to actually for banks to really look at a new way of, you know, sort of solving for customers and challenges. So that's the core of what we do. Obviously, we add layers on top of it. While technology is at the core, we power back office and tools for the banks. But the practical aspect of it is that whenever we enable the bank, we naturally can enable a number of fintechs or businesses that are looking to adopt these products. Right? So therefore, our customers or the supply side, while it comes from the bank, the demand side, which is businesses that are looking to embed, and that's the current, you know, buzzword, right? Embedded mm-hmm. finance, which is nothing but how do you, if there are companies or businesses that are owning user journeys, owning, you know, distribution cohorts, how do you meaningfully, you know, deploy, you know, banking products within their, you know, workflows, right? So if I'm a, let's say I'm a gaming company, how do I, which is a non-state based business, how do I put, you know, banking products in a gaming company, right? In a gaming company's app. So which is essentially bringing a regulated product into a sort of entertainment zone. Okay? So our job would then be to sort of work with the gaming company, figure out what is it that they need for their user standpoint, and really work with the bank to sort of enable that. In, you know, in the case where we don't exist, companies will take like a couple of years to figure out who in the bank we need to speak to make it happen, right? Leave alone getting it done, right? So it's a crystal maze of sorts for a lot of players who are not in the financial services to be actually able to, and not by design, it's just the fact that banks are structured that they lose a lot of time trying to figure out how to make some of these things happen. So therefore, the value prop for the ecosystem that we serve, where is for the banks, it is better technology, works, cloud native, mobile first, and all of the other. And for the demand side, which is businesses that are owning customer journeys or wanting to own customer journey, it's about how natively you can provide an experience, you know, how easy you can make it happen, and also create sort of revenue pools which they can go after, and, you know, if they create a good distribution. That's really where the business is.
So, I mean, just to understand, like, interrupt, but just to understand, like, your customers are the banks or your customers are the businesses?
So our customers, our customers are both, right? I mean, in the sense, we extract help from both of them.
Sure.
But our purpose is to sort of enable the fintech ecosystem. So I would like to believe they are our first customers.
Right.
Banks are more of an enabling infrastructure for us, in the sense, without the bank, our business will not exist, right? So therefore, while we would have revenue contracts with banks and, you know, we'd have arrangements with the banks, like the technology provider, but our true customer and where the business is sort of getting created is fintechs and, you know, like in some banks also want to become fintechs today, right?
Right. Yeah.
So therefore, you know, they will kind of double hand as well.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, it's, I remember like last time when we were talking, you said that, you kind of enable also banks to operate efficiently. I mean, that was pretty much, the crux of the conversation that we had last time. Like you mentioned that embedded finance is a buzzword. Similarly, like in the last 7 to 8 months, we hear of things like, you know, decentralized finance, DeFi, Ethereum, smart contracts. So it's a very, very, you know, kind of that entire crypto blockchain world is bringing another layer of, I would say, applications to this, to the interface between the financial services sector and businesses. It's a very, there's a lot of catch up going on, right? for the lack of a better way to put it. So what's your take on that? Like where, you know, at a very, I would say, broad macro level, the specific area which you guys focus on, where is it headed?
See, I think there is a lot of buzz around the whole crypto world, right? I mean, it's all the way from Elon, everybody has a view and, you know, they keep moving the market, you know, one way or the other. But at a foundational level, you know, there are businesses that have been trying, like even regulatorily speaking, RBI said, they have not said, you know, you can't do this, right? It's just that the banks have to ensure that, you know, those accounts that sort of deal with it are, you know, compliant and, you know, end user money and source are all sort of tracked, right? But the foundational issue in India today around, you know, why it's not becoming mainstream is the fact that a lot of the, you know, there's a perceived risk around, you know, people moving money black into white, right? So, but crypto, you cannot buy with cash. You know?
Yeah.
So therefore, you know, it is not like I can go to a, you know, go to some agent, you know, dump like a crore of cash and get that crypto into my account. But there is a perceived risk around it, right? So therefore, until that risk, you know, how can that risk be addressed, right? So if you look at it, risk gets addressed in two ways. One is some of these operators can have set their own rules, right? Which is, if you want to work with me, this is how I operate, right? Or there can be a statute which will say that defines the rule, right? Like KYC, for example, banks, there is some PMLA Act, right? Punjab Money Laundering Act, which basically RBI draws into, right? They give directions based on the law. So RBI merely interprets the law and says this is the direction from a KYC standpoint. So if there is an overarching, you know, legal framework around this, it makes it easier. Like, so is the case in a bunch of things that are at the intersection of digitization, privacy bill. And without that, how do you define what is data that is prudent to share? Right? So it has to, there has to be an overarching sort of legal framework for it. So I think we are lacking that. I think there is, the conversations have become mainstream. We see, you know, policymakers talking about it. I think it's just a moment in time where, you know, we'll probably get past this in the next 1 or 2 years. Right? And there is, like, initially, I mean, if you just go back in time, over the last 2 years, the step change that has happened in terms of initially saying, no, we are completely closed, to now people are saying that, you know, we never said it is closed, you know, you guys have to figure it out. And there will be acceptance that will come. We just have to go through the emotions in terms of getting there. But, you know, keeping that aside, I think there is just enough happening in India today to make this like a very hot, you know, innovation hub, right? In the form of what's happening around. And payments, I think we have kind of overdone it for the last few years. There is very little for people to innovate on. But other segments, right? How do you lend to MSMEs, for example? It's a massive opportunity, you know, because it's not just opportunity that is getting presented because we're growing and all that. There are a bunch of things that are happening at a macro level, which is creating an enabling ecosystem, right? Like GST has forced people to formalize their businesses, right? It's, without that, you can't get into credit. So if you're a construction, we'll say if you're a small-time, you know, real estate guy, if you have to get credit on cement, you have to show that, you know, you bought so much cement. Right? So therefore the truck that transports the cement will come into it, and therefore the fuel purchase that happens. So it's kind of an ecosystem level impact that is forcing people to come mainstream, not by design, but, you know, by lack of choice. Which will mean that if there are meaningful work that's happening around banking to lend based on some of these pro-based businesses, or for that matter, SME, you know, businesses, there will obviously be like a lot of takers. And that's why you find a lot of, you know, venture capital flowing into some of these opportunities that are out there. So we saw a wave between 2017 to 2018-19, which was, a lot of it was consumer-facing, right? So you have consumer-facing brands getting funded for digital lending. That wave in a different way is actually now setting into the MSME, non-consumer kind of thing, prosumers, SMEs, focused businesses are getting funded, which is basically a good sort of leading indicator to say that there is going to be, you know, where there is capital, there's going to be growth and, you know, sort of trial and error that is going to happen, right? Not all of them will succeed, but, you know, that's the name of the game.
Across the spectrum, right? I mean, lending is just one piece, which everyone seems to be doing now. You guys fit into every bucket, right? Be it like selling insurance or, you know, even mainstream banks coming downstream towards digitizing their apps, like which everyone is trying to go there, right? Some of them can lend, some of them can't. And even international operators, right? Some of them have banking licenses, some of them don't. But you sort of fit in across the spectrum, right? Because the nature of your tech stack, it sits across those platforms and across those market participants. Is there sort of a view to, you know, not lend, but like go into some of the business that they are doing, sort of vertically move towards a more banking sort of operation as well, using the kind of tech and data insights that you guys already generate?
So it's best to be an arms dealer in a war. Mm-hmm. So we are okay just providing the tools for others to sort of do it. I think the whole consumer side of the business, or for the matter, what organizational DNA that we have been able to create is to, you know, serve businesses well.
Yeah.
And we still are not there, you know, entirely, right? We still have a long way to go in terms of getting that business fully sort of shaped up. Mm-hmm. When we look at adjacencies, it's always, you know, sort of enticing to sort of say that, you know, this is something that we could do. But we are very clear that anything that we do where there is a potential channel conflict, right? If sure. I'm going to compete with somebody who's using my platform, which is not a good state to be in, right? So Intel was pretty much in every, you know, laptop for a reason, right? They never came sort of mainstream. But, you know, the fact is, these opportunities will keep presenting, and more you will have an optionality to do something directly to a consumer or some lending opportunity. But we actually believe that because of the network effects that are there in the platform, mm-hmm. We would actually solve a much larger problem if we crack the code on how some of the product position can happen. As an example, we today have like almost about 30 or 40 lenders on our platform, right? Which is digital lenders, banks, you know, NBFC and stuff like that. Right? We have real-time, sort of, we could potentially have real-time data around what's the leverage of an individual, right? So, from a new line that is being given, mm-hmm. We practically would know what's that guy's income, what is the amount of borrowing he has runtime. Right?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
We have better data than anybody else in the ecosystem because of the fact that we're sitting in the middle and orchestrating a lot of this. So we would be, you know, better serving a lot of the fintechs and expecting a lot more value mm-hmm. By putting that out as a data rather than saying, you know, let me also create like a lending business, which means that I'm basically asking others to assert us and go look for options. Right?
Yeah.
We would do a lot of stuff which would help us to build the core in terms of how we are serving, rather than, you know, we would never want to create a conflict.
And some of these clients of yours or businesses that sort of are sitting on your platform, do they sort of, want to take, internalize some of these, tech aspects of their business, or, you know, the marketplace is solid in terms of like outsourcing. You're the best guys at doing this. You guys understand the tech. You guys have a product which works. So instead of actually cracking at it from scratch, they're sort of happy to have someone like you guys come in and do all the tech work and API integrations and sort of plug it in place. Is that sort of how you're thinking of it? Or is there, you know, especially with the big banks, right? I mean, we see a lot of these neobanks sort of position themselves and then they look out to the big banks to do some kind of lead generation for them at some level. So it's a little an awkward relationship, right? But you guys have a clear tech positioning, so I don't see that. But is there a threat that some of these big guys, sort of internalize some of their tech?
Yeah, so I mean, like in the consumer, you know, neobank story, we believe that it's best for those fintechs to, you know, work directly with the bank. We don't, we in fact don't chase those opportunities simply mm-hmm. because we believe that long-term marginal utility will be, you know, very low, and we'll spend disproportionate amount of time trying to get these businesses up and running. Mm. So therefore, we took a call that we would focus on, you know, opportunistically speaking, right? We would not go after somebody building a consumer bank as a customer, right? So because of the exact reason that you are taking. Having said which, neobanking as a capability set you have, right? So somebody, let's say somebody is doing a merchant business and the logical extension from a financial services is for them to offer small ticket deposit product, right?
Sure.
So in that, can I get like 10 different deposit providers to be, you know, combined into one stack so that this business that is focusing on the merchant don't have to go integrate with 10 different players, we are able to aggregate that.
Hmm.
So that's essentially neobanking capability. And and then give the choice to the customer. He may want to bank with SBI, but today SBI is offering only 3%. So maybe he goes to Bajaj Finance and comes up with 6.5%. Right? So therefore, the choice will enable that business to serve their customer better. And we believe that that piece of the neobanking play, right, like where components can be used and the marginal utility from our platform is higher and it's sticky, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that we would focus on. But we don't see the thing with this is that, right, while it, on the outside, it, all of this looks like tech and somebody can, if we can do it, somebody else can do it. It builds over time, right? We call it as a land and expand. So in a bank, it starts something that's small, but there's, because we're dealing with money, there's an aspect of trust, there is governance that comes in terms of IT security, all the whole bunch of other things. For the value that you would, just like, let's say X dollars that you spend for using our service, as an example, the value that you would have to spend from time, resource, and getting to understand how the whole thing works will be significantly larger than the X. Right? So therefore, banks look at build versus rent, or rather, fintechs will look at build versus rent. And largest fintechs, that's the reason, like someone like an Ola, any of these players, if there's no dearth of talent or capital for them to get things like pretty much hire the best of talent to build this out. Right? And all of what we do is not rocket science. Right? Just the fact that the execution mode that we would have with banks will eventually sort of prevail, and people will not see value in, unless we bungle it up on tech, right? Which can be a big reason why people will want to sort of more. And otherwise, it becomes there is no monetary value in somebody doing it. Obviously, we'll also try to keep the business going. So we'll try to make it better. We'll change the goalpost and do it.
No, agreed, 100% agree. That narrative of someone else can come and do it, I don't find it a really strong one. So agree with what you're saying fully.
Madhu, interestingly, like when you were talking about neobanks, like I like when you look at like traditional banks working closely with guys like you versus traditional, I mean, it's a very viable alternate to the neobank option, right? I mean, in a way, are you kind of taking a long position on the traditional banking sector kind of leading majority of flows in the future, be it payments, be it lending? Obviously, RBI has been pretty clear on that, and they have been fairly calculating in terms of allowing a non-traditional player to actually start taking balance sheet risk. Right, they have been fairly measured, and there's a chance that might open up, but still the jury is out there, right? In which form or which shape, and effectively, most of the guys who end up actually controlling the flows of money in India are highly regulated entities, right? Be it scheduled commercial banks or NBFC. So is M2P kind of making a call that at the end of the day, that's the way business is going to happen, so it's better to kind of that's where the value add is, rather than actually trying to get into a consumer origination funnel through a neobanking model and then piggybacking on a banking partner and then eventually hoping to get a license and start lending on your own.
Yeah, so there are two or three things that I think, right? The jury is still out in terms of which way this will go. Right? What is clear is that if you just look at how if you just look at public markets and sort of where to take a look at how some of the private banks that took partnership as an approach, now they perform in the morning. They've been phenomenal in terms of the last 4-5 years because they took a whole partnership from growing their balance sheet and business, right? But the way we look at this is that increasingly you'll have new storefronts that will get created, right? For example, this already that's happening, right? So if you're on trade, you will see your personal loan, which is available on 2 clicks. Right? Practically doing away with the need to do a paper, wait for 1 week for whether the loan is approved or not. You're having everything. I mean, so that basically has become now a benchmark. Right? So every bank that would want to do PL, will have to at least match, and if not better, at least match to that level of experience. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these fintechs today are forcing banks to overthink, right? In the sense, how do we be seen enabling or providing the same level of experience. Right? It's a different matter, different argument, whether they'll be able to match up, they'll be able to spend that kind of dollars in marketing, creating that user experience and all. But I just believe that, you know, banks will be more ready in the next couple of years to cater to these new storefronts. Right? So what we don't see, but is a very strong undercurrent, is that you look at the consolidation that's happening at, you know, in large conglomerates, right? Everybody's talking of a super app, right? So there's going to be one from every large industrial house in India, where they're going to sort of come and say, I no longer need the bank license. I don't want to do the heavy lifting with the regulator. I would much rather serve my customer, right? So whether it's Jio, Tata's, you know, pretty much everybody, right? So we will see this strong customer-facing brands do a lot more of financial services, right? So therefore, are we better equipped to be, you know, partnering with the banks, and, you know, we become the first port of call from a bank from the moment we start working with them, because we will talk that fintech language, right? So we're able to give them the relevant APIs and stuff like that, right? So therefore, just being, you know, in a relationship with these banks to be able to serve them will help us capture some of these opportunities, you know, whenever, as and when they approach. So that's our take. But in the interim, we also see this as a flywheel effect, where something that the fintech does, like BNPL is a catch-up story now that's happening. There are a bunch of fintechs that have been doing it for the last 4-5 years. Now every bank is going to sort of look at that, because there is a momentum and there is realization that it can be a low-cost customer acquisition tool. Right? Mm-hmm. So you give a small ticket line to somebody, if this person repays promptly, potentially you can expand the relationship into a bigger asset product. So therefore, some of these new vectors from a product standpoint are drawn from the fintechs only. So, and who is best equipped to sort of help the bank put it together is us, because we are at a vantage point where we know what has worked, what has not worked, and then sort of piece that together.
Interestingly, a lot of this innovation comes from fintechs, agreed, but when it comes to, and also, I mean, fintechs take a lot of lead in terms of, you know, having superior customer experience, you know, knowing how to navigate that entire part of the journey. But often when it comes to financial services products, customers are also phenomenally sensitive about things like pricing, things like trust, and that's where I think big banks definitely have a much bigger advantage, right? I mean, in terms of them being deposit funded, or those basic cogs that they hold, that kind of serves to be invaluable, no?
Yeah, I mean, you hit a very important sort of point, right? Like, I'm just using this for example, right? So if there is a bank from North India, and if there is a brand, let's say in Tamil Nadu, for example, just for argument's sake, let's say TVS. Right? TVS is a much better household name with us than North India, which I have not done. Right? So the whole trust thing itself is subjective. So if TVS is tomorrow going to offer a banking product which is backed by the same bank from North India, probably there will be more takers than the bank trying to do it by themselves. Yeah. Right? So the persona beyond the top 100, 200 million people and the way they think about consuming products digitally is very, very different from how we are doing it. Right? You could have somebody telling you that I tried this product, why don't you try it? You're going to download that app and sort of do it. But in a tier 3 setup, I'm just broad basing this, in a tier 3 kind of a setup where people are beyond the top 100, 200 million people, there is going to be an aspect of physical touch point of enabling them to go digital. Right? And in a couple of large NBFCs, we have tried this, we have seen this where they put out a product, let's say it's a gold loan company, for example. The product is that, you come, it's a very simple product, right? You give gold, this guy gives you cash, right? That's the business, right? And when you repay, you pay in full, you make a bullet payment, and you get the gold back, right? As simple as that. But what we realized was that, gold as a business is a commodity, right? So you'll find there is a Muthoot, there will be Manappuram, and there will be 3-4 other providers in that segment, all in the same compound or neighborhood, right? So it will be like 100 meters apart. Because if there are 3 people in a queue in one store, the guy naturally goes to the next shop and goes about doing this business. There's no value, or there's no affinity to that brand.
Yeah.
What we were able to achieve was that we were able to actually get a digital product into one of the gold loan companies where it got embedded, it got sold, or the customer got converted in the physical branch. Right? So let's say if I have 1 lakh rupees worth jewelry, just because I needed 20,000 rupees loan, I don't break my interest. I actually pledge the whole gold.
Right?
So therefore, there is LTV maximization, or the loan value, you can top up to 80%. That's what the regulatory 80 or 90%. So So therefore, the subsequent top up, the customer need not even visit the branch. He can just open the app and say, "I need a top up."
Yeah, understood. Right.
So the customer who was there in the branch who got educated with the product when he took it physically has now sort of moved to the digital. So some of these are aspects that are very nuanced to India as a market, and within the country, how it operates, let's say in Tamil Nadu, will change completely from how it operates. Like collection tech, for example. You can't have the same, like a student in Bombay and a student in Bhopal are two different sort of people to deal with. Right? How do you collect money from them are very different. So therefore, a lot of these products today, going back to the trust portion, a lot of the consumer brands today have grown that trust there. That's what they're trying to leverage on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about multiple different things here, but I genuinely feel like of the so many people lending in fintech, is so many operators in the fintech space are sort of into the lending business, and it's sort of become like a crowded marketplace of just spruced up, slick looking apps doing something that the big banks can easily do. You guys are very differently positioned in that aspect, and sort of tech first and API driven, but I genuinely feel like a lot of these fintechs 5 years from now will not be there in the marketplace. I mean, there has to be some kind of not just consolidation, but ultimately the bigger banks will come for smaller tickets with the advantage, like Nikhil alluded to, is access to wholesale debt, right, at a cheapest cost of capital. So, being sort of tech centric, a company such as yours, right, who else is doing such a thing? Like, it seems like when we look at the kind of way you guys are thinking about business, there are not too many guys who are doing that in India, even in the world, right? I mean, yesterday we were, we sort of wrote about it, Transfin, about Revolut, which, is sort of doing well in fintech and 33 billion valuation, but they have a banking license. So they're sort of thinking about it in a slightly different way, right? But close proxy to yours, who do you think is out there doing something similar? I mean, we talked about Plaid last time, but is there anyone else that you have stumbled upon?
Yeah, so there is this, the markets are also very different, right? India is a completely different animal, and how we are going about serving for fintech, which is very different to how the Western world operates, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you have foundational challenges in the West, right? Like in the US, if you send money through ACH, it's going to take 2 days to reach it. PayPal as a business came 20 years back, it's still a very relevant business. So therefore, the arbitrage opportunity that is there in a lot of the Western markets is very different to how it is in India. Right? Here, it is a distribution challenge. In the US and Europe, to a large part of Europe, it's a product challenge. Right? So you don't have efficient payment system. You have very expensive cross-border payment. That's why Revolut finds that.
Yeah.
So for us, the code to crack is how do you go, why did fintech companies come in and do lending, right? India has this great story around consumer consumption credit and all that. If you fundamentally look at it, it's because banks have not been able to underwrite the customer beyond a certain threshold. Right? There are no footprints of your existence and your income. Banks don't have to prepare to do it. And in their domain, for the capital that they have, if I have to deploy, let's say, $100, I would much rather go and put that behind something that I know and understand,
sure,
rather than trying something new, right? And that has been the main reason for exclusion. So therefore, fintech companies will come, they will solve for some of these use cases. There will be macro factors that will play out, as I mentioned earlier. All of this will come together, right? So if you just look at, some of the large NBFCs and how they've gone about, but that is a great example of how they've built that. All the private banks were there. All of them, they operate only largely in urban centers.
Mm-hmm.
And they've eaten out of, all these banks for lunch, right? And they're not, they obviously didn't have the advantage of having a balance sheet from a bank, despite that they've been in the franchise. So therefore, there would be a few that will, build out into large, valuable business. Obviously, many will fall by the wayside, or they'll not be able to scale to a certain point. But I think we are at an interesting sort of point where we would have India-centric sort of models that will come out. In fact, we are taking models from India and looking at other markets where we can buy it and see if we can make it work. Right? And come back to your earlier question on, globally, there are a few companies that do this infrastructure play. There's a company called Mercata which got listed recently. So they did extremely well in the last 5-6 years.
Yeah.
They're about a 8-9 year old company. They were listed for almost about $16-17 billion. And there are a few other markets sprinkled all over the world. Asia, we don't have many players.
Yeah.
We are trying to do this. Likewise in Europe, we have a few of them. Visa recently acquired them. They also play a similar open banking payment infrastructure there.
Yeah.
But a lot of work has happened in Middle in Europe around open banking.
Sure. Yeah.
GDPR and how you can access data.
Yeah.
Well, this is super interesting, and I remember we had touched this topic as well the last time we spoke. But I think many checks have been signed since then for you guys. We wanted to obviously understand, you know, how's capital raising been. It's been a good year. You've obviously, you know, raised up to around 16 million. And there's a fair amount of press commentary on, you know, guys like on big guys like Tiger Global looking at you guys at, you know, for a 35 mil tranche, big valuation numbers also being, you know, thrown around. You don't have to obviously comment on that, but similarly on the neo banking space also, you know, several significantly big early stage investments have come in, and you know, a few of those products are in the waiting list. You know, they haven't really been live, but they have raised a fair amount of money.
Yeah.
How do you see the, you know, the kind of not at a domestic level maybe, but from you know, outside in perspective, foreign funds looking at Indian startups within the fintech domain, within your specific area of you know, infra, or you know, more consumer facing neo banking or lending? How do you see, you know, what's the perspective that you know, global funds have as of now? Because, you know, for instance, I mean, I kind of will just walk a few years back.
I'm too expert, but the way we see this is that, yeah, so there are three, you know, like India is going through at least three or four distinct sort of themes, right? There is one which was e-com, right? They were the first year of fintech, which was, like, all these payment gateway companies and all got funded, they built scale and all that, right? Which is basically, you know, just global models that played out well, right? So e-com grew, therefore payment gateway need came about. So it had a lot of, you know, takers that were there for those investments to grow into those companies. So there has been a few successes, you know, a lot of misses and all that. So that's basically just porting the model that I worked in the West and, you know, into India, right? So that's kind of run its course. The second wave is what we see in businesses like ours, and it's largely thematic in the sense, you know, there is like a, in the moment in history, opportunity in the next, you know, 5 to 6 years, you know, starting 3-4 years ago, where the ecosystem is going through a transition, right? Like it happened in China between 2007-8 to 2015, where, you know, mobile came the first sort of protocol for, you know, every financial or every service for that matter in the life, right? So India is going through that. So there's a macro theme around, you know, how, you know, businesses that are enabling this, there is belief that anybody will be able to execute, not just financial delivery, right? It could be food delivery, you know, subject now. Everywhere there is mobile-led growth that is seen, India has the denominator to actually expect any kind of benefit. So it's a different matter how you execute, how you are able to create value for the company as such. But the, you know, the headroom for growth is massive, so therefore there will be a lot more money that you get out. Which is part of the, you know, we are also sort of, we'll probably start ourselves into that, because there is macro factors that are enabling, there's a lot of tailwinds to the world. More and more digitization is happening, more fintechs are coming in, therefore we will, you know, we'll sort of grow with a lot of these companies. The third is the growth of what I would loosely call as D2C brands, right? You see that there's an explosion in terms of new brands that are coming in, from coffee to whatever, right? Like grooming for men to whatnot. So that is completely like, you know, a hybrid of what has worked in the West and how it is getting adapted to Indian sort of context, right? So therefore, money flow opportunities are also chasing these three, you know, very, very different things. The first bucket is more late stage financing, because you need big checks to keep that in. So there will be further consolidation that will happen. We'll have like $5-6 billion mergers that will come about, you know, in the next 2 years. But the second and third are, you know, you'll have high velocity, you know, of new companies that will come in. As a case in point, you know, last year in Q1, we had like about 15 companies in 2020, right, before the pandemic actually hit. We had like 15 companies that signed up on our platform. Right? Mm-hmm. This year, for the same number, is like 84 or 85, right? Like, mm-hmm. Nothing changed. India is the same market. We have gone through a pandemic. In April, we had like 40 or 50 companies. So this is just acceleration in terms of early stage companies trying to problem solve it. I'm sure not many of them will succeed, but you know, we are basically saying that of the 40, there will be two which will, you know, become really large, right? So therefore, we would not make assumption, we will not second guess, but we have to just make sure that we are able to sort of enable as many as possible.
Right. In terms of size of deals which are happening in the venture world, you know, there's always that kind of, you know, red herring, you know, valuations are going, I mean, venture world, obviously we're looking at the private world, on the public side as well, valuations are kind of, you know, reaching an all-time high all throughout. And, you know, now you see big checks being written at a fairly early stage within the Indian context as well. And, you know, like two-year companies, three-year-old companies, you guys obviously have had a fair amount of operating activity behind you before you kind of, you know, hit those milestones. But a lot of businesses get money much earlier also, right? And that might be a good thing, that might be a bad thing. Yeah. You know, there are kind of, you know, both sides of the story. But do you kind of see also a cycle of correction coming in at some point in time, you know, within your sector, for example?
Yeah, see, there are, you know, like, the guys who write the check, you know, for them, this is like putting your money behind the best horse, right? So therefore, there are only a few choices. You will go to any extent to make sure that, you know, you have a seat at the table. Having said which, I think there is, you know, it's a, you know, this is, you know, investing in any form, it follows a sort of cyclical pattern. There will be, so I don't see India going through distress because there will be like a funding gap. Where will the liquidity go, right? So there is both from potential opportunity as well as, you know, the overall market size and all of the other variables that go into sort of making a decision. You know, you don't have a lot of foreign capital coming. You know, China is like, is the troubled child if nobody wants to sort of partner. There's still a lot of activity that happens there, but publicly speaking, if India presents a better opportunity from just pure ROI standpoint because of other factors that are going well here, there would be more money and liquidity that will come into this market, both in private and public as well. But at the same breath, I think we would, you know, every 2 years you'll have a cycle, right? You had wallets in 2015, 16, it became lending, it is now SME focused lending, you know, had, in between some other sort of products. The product, you know, also is a cyclical sort of way. Every venture would try to invest into products in that cohort, right? Because you will have consolidation, you know, the largest player may, you know, try to acquire the, you know, smaller ones. So therefore, you know, they, you know, end up investing, you know, in cohort so that you know that if there is, and that's the nature of the business. Right? So that's what will happen. But fundamentally, I don't see, you know, India cooling down for the next.
I mean, like, it's interesting, like you mentioned liquidity, you know, I mean, when it comes to liquidity, obviously that's something that, I mean, there are two aspects to it, right? One is in terms of new capital coming in, and all the other is also in terms of existing investor getting exits, right? Be in terms of listing or some sort of a secondary. And I mean, for quite some time, listing was probably the only thing that, you know, we used to talk about. But now we are also, I think, slowly seeing some kind of a, you know, traction in terms of investors getting secondary exits. I mean, I haven't seen any analysis of, you know, like looking at the big VCs, be it Sequoias or Axels, like how their India funds have performed in terms of secondaries. I think that would be an interesting exercise to do. That also, I think, brings a fair amount of comfort, right, to an institutional player that, you know, they don't have to actually wait for the 8-10 year cycle.
Yeah, as you said, right, India is probably like 5-6 years behind it, right? Like in this sense, you just look at China as a proxy and forget all the politics behind it, but you just look at China as a proxy, the big payback started happening, you know, 12-13 years after they got into the, you know, startup wave, right? Like if you take 2005-6 as the starting point of their, you know, whole startup ecosystem journey, it's only 2015-16 saw the rise of, you know, tech companies from China, right? I mean, broadly speaking, we are still not there. We are like, you know, deep into some of these, you know, while there have been VC action for the last 18 years, like e-com, we've already seen one wave of company exits and all that. But the real value or the real sort of exits will start happening I mean, like in the next 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 2025 will be like a good time to sort of recalibrate and see how well you've done. Right? The early signs are at least like what's happening with some of these listings. Like I think from 4 or 5 internet companies that will come. That will encourage more people to come because it actually strengthens the result from the market standpoint. You know, this market, you're not losing any good time. It's not some wild regulatory sort of thing that you know, bring that $1 billion business to zero overnight.
I love your optimism, and it we are also deep down optimists. We just ask these questions, you know, just to kind of make a more interesting conversation. But no, thanks a lot, Madhu. This has been a great chat. Thanks for, you know, finding the time, and hopefully we'll catch up soon again, you know, after another 5-6 months with a few more checks written. Anyways, I mean, we would love to, you know, get your kind of ongoing.
It comes true, yeah.
That's been the historical cadence, right? So we do another chat, and then another check comes.
Yeah,
in.
Absolutely.
So that's the effect
we have.
I would
love to come back every 3 months also.
Brilliant. I wish you all the best. Very exciting things are happening, and we are sure they'll continue to happen. Yeah, we'll keep in touch. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Madhu. Have a good one.
Cool. Take care. Thanks.